heard a man on the radio this morning, and it was about 5:30 or 6 o'clock this morning. It was a show about radio, black radio. Anybody hear that story on NPR?
Yes, that was great.
That was really good.
The
Philadelphia Sound. It could have been here in the Metro, Newark or New York, or it could be in any of the big cities around the nation that developed black radio somewhere after World War II, mostly. And in particular, as television starts to take over, radio stations become more open to African Americans, right? Because they were losing dollars then. You know, all the white folks got TVs. And, some white folks had TVs. I know where my grandparents lived. Their son built the TV. It was the only TV on the block, and they were the only colored folks, as they were known back then, on the block. So some white folks obviously didn't have TV. But nevertheless, this man was a singer and made a statement about his hearing his own voice over the radio. And I was taken by that because here the service is being recorded, and my voice, long after I'm dead and gone, might reside in some warehouse of sermons done by some, you know, Unitarian Universalist preacher. So it gives me a moment of pause because Mama always said, be careful what you say, son. And I'm prone to say all kinds of things. Moved by the Spirit, mind you. These aren't things that are of Gordon's own reckonings. They're things that I'm directed to say. I'm not going to say divinely, but somehow they come to me. And so this idea of a nation without us, a nation without African Americans, a nation without Negroes, a nation without colored folks, although as I look at the European Americans here, you come in various hues, so you're colored too. But you know, we know what we mean when we talk about colored folks, huh? Right? A nation without us. What would that be? Has anybody here ever pondered that thought? No black folks? No civil rights struggle? No jazz? No Ellington? What on earth would it mean? No prison industrial complex warehousing a million Negroes. What on earth would it mean? So here's where I started. Sermon. Place the conversation in the mind. I want to look at what's the intellectual things that have come to us as gifts from the African diaspora. I want to look at the body politics or social institutions that have come as a result of Africans being in the Americas. Right? I want to look at the spiritual things. So I'm always about this, the mind-body-spirit connection. That's what floats my boat. If any one of those boats are in trouble, the whole thing's going to sink. Right? So I want to look at the mind, the body, and the spirit and try to discern what on earth with this nation have been like. And there was a woman here a couple weeks ago, or whenever I was here last time, she said America would be Australia without African Americans. Who amongst us has gone to Australia? Did you find it an engaging and wonderful place to be? What'd you think? No? Was it lacking in some soul? Lord have mercy. Australia. They have Aborigines, but I don't know if the Aborigines, who I believe anthropologically are Africans that migrated out of the Rift Valley into Asia Minor, and when the sea levels were lower, somehow found themselves in Australia a very long time ago. So long ago, in fact, they don't even know they're Negroes anymore, right? They're Aborigines. But their DNA is very similar to DNA of peoples in Africa. As are white folks, to tell you the truth. So it's human family, right? Nevertheless, what would that be? So, for instance, let me start here. Columbus set sail. I'm not a fan of Columbus. I have to admit that. In fact, I was just telling Lisa as we drove, if somehow I came down with some horrible disease and knew I had a short time to live, I'd go to Columbus Circle and take down his statue. That's how much I don't like that man. He is the root cause of so much of the problems that happen on this side of the Atlantic, north and south. But Columbus had Africans sailing with him. The Spanish brought Africans with them as they began to build their colonies here in the Americas, in particular here in North America. Spaniards brought some 100,000 Africans to Mexico before 1700. So long before our nation forms, the Spaniards had Africans here. Funny thing about Mexico, Africans had been there, if anyone's been to southern Mexico and has seen the great heads that reside down there. Those are clearly a Negroid-type face depicted in those huge stone heads, right? And there are stories by the indigenous people of Africans having come. But nevertheless, in this modern conception of things, understanding and all, these Spaniards bring Africans with them. And they go up a river that meets some, I believe it's the PD River, but I may be wrong. They go up this PD River, it's in Georgia, and they have 100 Africans with them. Most English textbooks tell us that the first permanent African settlement is here in 1619 down in Virginia, Jamestown. Okay, that's a permanent settlement. But these 100 Africans came with the Spaniards 50 or 60 years prior to that. And when the Spaniards met up with the indigenous peoples of that area, they ran for their lives. The Africans were clearing the land, preparing a little village for them or something. They didn't get those people. They got on their boat and set sail back to the Atlantic and I guess back to Mexico. So the first permanent African settlement here in the United States was in Georgia. The anthropologists and linguistic people have figured out that these 100 were assumed or consumed by the indigenous people. But vestiges of that first incursion of Africans into the Americas still exist if you do your homework really well. Jump forward. Let's jump forward. As the Spaniards start to investigate what's now our Southwest, they've got Africans with them. Africans that are part of those expeditions searching for cities of gold, searching for fountains of youth. Africans are always traveling with these Spaniards. You see, this whole concept of race, as we understand it, was still relatively new at the time of that colonial period, age of conquest of sorts, right? I jump us forward further. Let's go to a cold place. A place that I find it hard to believe is the most liberal place in these United States, Massachusetts. Marriage equality, Obamacare, or what did they call it first? Romneycare? Was it Romneycare? All right, so Massachusetts, ironically, plays itself out as our most liberal state in the nation. And it's a defining place for a man that we clearly call colored or black or Negro or something, is the first to die in a great event. What event am I speaking about? The Boston Massacre. The Boston Massacre. It wasn't quite a massacre. Three people died upon the shooting. Two others died later from the wounds. Eight others were injured. And they prompted the whole thing. I mean, anybody throwing rocks and sticks and snowballs at a military garrison is seeking trouble, right? Who on earth would do that save a fool, right? And poor Crispus Attucks. It's not enough that he's an escapee. Is it? He escaped from slavery, right? It's not enough that he's not even normal to anyone who sees him, because he's a tri-racial person. He's Native American. The name Attucks is a Native American name for the indigenous people of coastal Massachusetts. He's African, His mother was a slave, and he's white. Christmas addicts, you know? But the one drop tendency or rule must have been in effect, because he was known as a Negro, right? Save for the British officer who writes the report after this event, saying, "I know not what kind of man this addict's fellow is. He's neither black nor white nor Indian." You see, mixed race people were not commonplace in that world. They really didn't know how to discern. Barack Obama would not have been understood as a Negro, really. He's not black nor white, right? They weren't used to seeing this blended people. And so Christmas Addicts and that whole event sets us into a dialogue that I think is worthy and important. And it helps reshape this vision of America if we're willing to go there. If we're willing to go there. So let's imagine no Christmas Addicts. Let's imagine no Africans in Georgia. Let's imagine no Africans with Columbus. Let's imagine that as the Europeans arrive here in North America, they meet up with the peoples of this continent. The diseases that were spreading all through the continent were ravaging the indigenous peoples, and there weren't many people to work. There were problems. England was emptying its jails as they could. The Georgia colony is one example of a penal colony. Maybe we've got a space colony to send our prisoners to now. There's a need for workers. There's a need for workers. I haven't been to the Essex County Historical Society, but I would imagine that the Dutch and the English, whoever the early settlers over here, must have had some Africans with them. I'm from Manhattan Island, and they sure enough had Africans building the canal on Canal Street, and they had the Africans build the wall that's named for Wall Street, because they put a wall around that initial colony that was there, known as New Amsterdam, right? So I imagine those who were over here in Essex County weren't doing the work all by their lonesome, right? Anybody that can get somebody else to do the hard work does, don't they? I'm one of those fools that rather than fight with his children would rather do the work than to get them to do it. I guess I wouldn't have been a good slave master. I'd be like, "Them no good slaves. I just do it myself," right? Imagine these 13 colonies. Imagine this landmass where they say that the tree cover went from the Atlantic Ocean, you know, scrub grass along the coast and all, but then tree cover largely from the Atlantic seaboard to the Mississippi River. Native Americans are here, indigenous peoples, and they have their villages and their farming and all, but their population was relatively small. This is a vast and wide open space. And here come these white folks, mostly from England and Scotland and Germany and Holland, into this place. Who's going to do all the work? So no Negroes to do the work. The colonies would stay relatively close to the Atlantic seaboard, I believe. I believe the incursion into the Onondaga and Oneida and Mohawk Nation up north in New York and into Delaware, or what is Delaware? What's their real name? The Lenape? Are there the people that lived here in Jersey, this part of Jersey? What's this mountain range called right back here? See, these, I don't know about incursions too far into these spaces. See, if you don't have somebody that's going to work the land and prepare crops and build housing stock for you, how are you going to engage in stealing somebody's land? You know, what happened in that revolutionary period or that pre-revolutionary period was that quite often a farmer could send his slave to serve in the local militia on his behalf. Imagine that. Oh, yeah, nice Englishman. Hey, Otis, I want you to go serve for me, boy. That might be nice, right? I don't want to get my hands dirty. Otis, you're the one. See, so if we start to think about it, imagine a land where the banjo never comes over, right? Because the banjo is that seminal African instrument. Almost like a guitar, but not. I think it's just the lower sound, you know, the musician, the lower quadrant of guitar music, right? But that banjo, those percussions, those sounds, talking drums never get over here. You see, musical things of Europe, a quartet, I guess, a sextet, This is it. So, America, the colonies stay with England, I believe. England never loses Canada or the United States or any of the Caribbean islands because these places stay relatively sparsely populated. They stay sparsely populated because the indigenous peoples are able to hold the Europeans at bay, mostly along the coastal regions. See, when you don't have Africans to do much of the work, like in the French and Indian War, they used their slaves to fight that war, and that's upsetting to me because I like Native Americans. I feel awfully bad that black folks conspired with the white folks to kill Native Americans. Not a good thing. Not a proud moment in black history, right? Bad enough, you're here and being subjugated, you're going to help kick somebody else's backside. I never hear any black folks feeling too sad and sorry about that. They conspired with the white folks to steal somebody's land. So here we go. English colonies, based along the Atlantic seaboard, stretching from Georgia to Massachusetts. Maine isn't really part yet. I guess the Massachusetts Bay Colony may have claimed Maine, but it's just French and some Dutch fur traders and all up there, right? It doesn't develop much. New York beyond Albany, Kingston was the capital. Just along the Hudson, Long Island, it doesn't grow much. New Jersey, from Camden to Fort Lee, it grows. It grows because it's a major highway between Boston and Philadelphia. And those are the major cities, right? Boston, Philadelphia, New York is growing. All these things. But think about the technological advances that these African peoples bring with them. You know, the Texas Longhorn is actually an African variety of cow. Didn't come from some Texas folks. That the idea of a cowboy was what you called a Negro who handled those African Longhorns. Wasn't no man in no 10-gallon hat being honored with his silver spurs. This is an African, huh? A gaucho, a cowboy. He didn't call white men boy. Wasn't done. You wonder about this world. You wonder about a world where if we were to freeze frame Revolutionary War, the actual numbers are 1/5 to 1/4 of all the people that served were African. Daughters of the American Revolution. How happy they are to find some black folks claiming their status in it, right? Yeah, because it wouldn't be a revolution. It couldn't have come to be. George Washington left, I believe, his son in charge of his plantation when he went off to war. The reason I say it's his son, because when you visit that beautiful estate off the banks of the Potomac River, there's the big house, lovely big house. And there's the houses of the slaves. And I give Washington a lot of credit. He had brick homes for his slaves. What a guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. George was all right. Wooden teeth and all. Must have had some bad breath. Can you imagine some wet, soggy wooden teeth up in your head? Woo! Halitosis out there. But here we are with this slave quarters right there. You know, like you look out the window of the big house, and there they are right there, Negroville. And there's one particular big house attached to the slave quarters. But this person is clearly a slave, but he's the preferred slave of General Washington. I wonder which one of his concubines sighed that one. Some say Georgetown was founded by those children that they used to go over across the river when Washington would be good to them, give them a little time off. They go over there and do some building and all. But this one slave kept everything going for the general. Martha didn't have to worry about a thing. Martha was in good hands. See? Like all said, Martha was in good hands. Imagine again, let's look again, how we get to a place where there's no rice production. That's why they brought the slaves to South Carolina and those other wet southern places, Louisiana, to cultivate rice. Indigo, no indigo, nothing blue, baby, all the things blue. Oh, no peanuts, because even though peanuts are from South America, they had migrated to Africa and then come back with the slaves to be planted over here, right? All these many things. Oh, no watermelons. Oh, what? No melons? No black-eyed peas? No sesame seeds. I thought sesame seeds were Asian. Didn't know that Africans had brought them. There's this long litany of things that come from Africa and only come because the slavers needed to feed the people something in that horrific transatlantic crossing, and they brought the things that the people had eaten on that side. Not like they packed up some nice things from Europe for them. No brie entered into that conversation. No lovely baguettes. Huh? No white wine to wash it down with. You see, the things of Africa were brought with the Africans as they entered into an America that was only an imaginary place. Somebody had dreamed a dream of a land where white men were kings and where white women were their possessions and property. And people of color, no matter what variety, really didn't count. Subhuman strata, let's call them, right? Non-Christian folks. Doesn't matter that the first one that converted to following their Christianity was the Ethiopian eunuch. That doesn't matter. They couldn't read the Bible anyway. They were largely ignorant themselves. But by faith, by luck, by happenstance, they're in control. Europeans in control of the land. And so as this land would have developed, you'd still be listening to the music of the quartets and the sextets and all the chamber music, which I love. My wife will tell you, opera and that kind of stuff. It's good. I enjoy it. It's got its place. If I've got to write a sermon or write one of your eulogies someday, I'm going to listen to some music that's not going to have me jumping and jiving, right? I'm going to listen to something that might help me concentrate. And so I find that music very helpful. But can you imagine a place with no rock and roll? Because you can't get to rock and roll without a banjo. You can't get to rock and roll without percussion. You can't get there because there's no Bo Diddley, right? There's none of these people that we think of as important figures in our American story. There's no Frederick Douglass because he's half white, and oops, there's no Negro Mama. There's no Alexander Hamilton to create our banking system because on the island of Nevis, when Hamilton is born, there's no white women. Go do the math. You can't create a white man when there ain't no white women. Nevis, an island in the Caribbean. Oops, I guess that island wouldn't even have been cultivated because there wouldn't have been slaves to clear it for them. The diseases that the Spaniards and other early explorers had wiped out the indigenous populations of those islands. My great-grandmother is supposed to be a little woman with a long head of hair down below her backside in Jamaica. But in Jamaica, they said the Arawak were wiped out. So what was she? You see, what happens to a place when the people who do the hard work, and this is not to say that the Paul Bunyans and all the hard-working white folks didn't work, but it doesn't even get to happen the way it's happened without these Africans. I said this was a mind, body, spirit thing. So if we think of intellectual properties, or who knows who the first black author is, published author in the United States? Phyllis Wheatley. That's right. Thank you. A slave who had been taught to read and write. Phyllis Wheatley. She's a poet. I'm not fond of her poetry. It's kind of boxed into that era in which she lived. But it's amazing. But if we think about intellectual things, Benjamin Banneker, a clockmaker who designs our nation's capital. Somebody would have designed it. Clearly, Europeans knew how to design cities. And if anyone has ever driven around Washington, D.C., you may have found it easy if you know how to navigate it. The streets are alphabetical, and the streets then go up by syllable. A Street, Apple, Albemarle. See? I lived there for years before I realized that that's how the city worked, broken into four quadrants. It was a perfect square at one point, but Virginia took back their piece right across the Potomac because the city straddled the two states. So no Benjamin Banneker, no slaves that put the dome on the Capitol. Now, I don't know, I think they imported Italian artists or architects or engineers, but it was slaves that did that work, right? No White House, in fact. Slaves built that too. You start to get a picture of a nation that doesn't come to fruition, and for my sake, I kind of like the idea of still being British, under the British domain. If there was slavery, it would have ended sooner. Interesting. Look up a name, Charlotte of Mecklenburg. She's an interesting figure that's married to George III when they end slavery in Great Britain. Charlotte isn't quite what you all might imagine an English queen to be. Look her up. You'll be amazed. And so this amazing story that never comes to fruition here in these colonies of the British Empire. Because without the slaves, without the intellectual thoughts that come out of a people longing for freedom, how much does the longing for freedom play into our American mind? No, Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln's importance to us doesn't need to happen. Lincoln and the Douglas debates never happened. Thaddeus Stevens, none of this happens. Missouri Compromise doesn't happen. Oh, what's the man that invented the cotton gin? I'm trying to see. I was a social studies teacher, so I'm really seeing how many of you remember what on earth you were taught. Yeah, it doesn't happen. There's no cotton industry. Whites who were indentured servants in the South couldn't take the weather. Much of the South was swampy. They needed these applicants who had already been through the whole malaria thing and whatnot to drain the swamps. New Orleans doesn't happen really as we know it. The Spanish and the French, maybe. Maybe New Orleans does happen because it's a different thing. But the America that we know, the United States that we know, it's impossible. It can't be. Even more to the point, it can't be because there's a great hypocrisy in our American system about this racial identity thing. There were white people like Hamilton who weren't as white as they claimed to be. Even our third president, Thomas Jefferson, I don't believe is as white as he claims to be. In fact, there's much literature about Jefferson going and getting all the information about his mother because she appears to be a woman of mixed ancestry. For in those earliest years of colonizing this land, there were few to no white women available. And Native American and, those African women became the wives and mistresses of those early white men. You know, it's relatively easy in a generation or two to whitewash a black person. Yeah, whitewash them. You marry a black marries a white, you sire children, they come out kind of, if you don't mind me picking on you, you got pretty light brown skin. You get lighted up in one generation. Ooh, you get a white man. Ooh, your child comes out white-like. That's exactly what's happened in my family. In less than two generations, children look white. They're not white, right? But oh, in America, how people play games. You see, all these tales, all the music, all the food, I don't know if you don't like okra, I beg your pardons, I love okra. Pickle it, fry it, put it in gumbo, I put it in my succotash. The culinary things, fried chicken was something that Africans made. I like fried chicken, I'm trying to break away from it. Not good for me. Awfully tasty. No corn cakes, huh? Corn cakes was something they fed the slaves initially. Corn was something white folks thought was food for animals. Spaniards started eating it, but the English and all that, we didn't want that. That's for the pigs and cows. For the slaves. No cornbread. No music from Louis Armstrong. You started with Louis Armstrong, that first piece. Louis Armstrong and my father were childhood friends long ago and far away down in New Orleans. But none of that musical variety. You know, Armstrong's the first musician to supposedly step away from the band, right? Step away from the quartet, step up front and do solo. You knew that? You saw that, all that jazz? No, that's not it. Who did the great documentary on jazz? Ken Burns, if you haven't seen it, please see it. This America is a mind-body-spirit experiment. And so if we go into the spirit, we're going to have all of the African religions coming to the Americas, right? Voodoo. Ancestor worship. Animist. Philosophies, a propaganda, not propaganda, theological positions of people who are animist, Christians, for there were African Christians that were enslaved, African Muslims. Much of West Africa had started the conversion towards Islam. And I know one family that was able to maintain their Muslim story all throughout slavery. Much like in Spain and Portugal, those Jews and Muslims who built sanctuaries in their home and held on to their faith. This African family known by Fleming now, African name was Kaniki, and these West Africans were Muslim. And the aunt of my dear friend is a history professor at the University of South Carolina. She did all her research. They had a Quran that was brought from Africa. How that thing had made the transatlantic crossing. How they were able to hold on to their story against all odds. We are the descendants of people, black and white, Native American, who survived something so horrific, mere words will never be able to do it justice. And yet, think of the amazing things that we've become, that we've created. I work with lots of Africans. They say, oh man, you know African. I say, I know. And I go, I'm glad. I'm a new creation in a new land. Much like Crispus Attucks, I don't exist without this land. So understanding in America as an Australia with just the indigenous people to be used and abused and a few white folks who couldn't fully take over their land because Australia, they live mostly on the coast. And the other side of Australia is very hot. Is that Perth? The city is far on the other side. There's a UU congregation there, and the minister there is a friend of mine, went to seminary with me, keeps asking me, Gordon, we'll do a pulpit exchange. I go, what? No, I might come visit. I'm staying there for 6 months. No, thank you. No. No, you see, as much as I've kind of dreamed of Australia as some far place, I don't want to go there. I don't want to go to a place where peoples that know my story and the music and the culture and the good things that African peoples and their descendants, the multicultural, multi-ethnic, colored, mixed, miscegenated peoples of America, of the Americas have created. How can you begin to imagine a world that doesn't have us? The Great Awakening, you know of that event? Upstate New York. Fire and brimstone preaching. Hallelujah. All this fire, fervent fire. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus today, Jesus tomorrow, Jesus for all time. And it takes this nation by storm. We, the American peoples, are the descendants of the most religious type of fanatical people almost on the planet. These Muslims that we see in these little countries in the media, that's small stuff compared to what we're descendants of. And not just one great awakening, but two. 80-some% of Americans say they believe in God. This nation was founded by an intellectual class of people that may have been deists, but the people who were living here were godly Christian people, supposedly. Christianity as prescribed by that era in time. For the Bible said, if you're a slave, be a good slave, right? I'm paraphrasing, but right? You know. So they use that. And they use things from the Bible to say, well, you darkies are the offspring of Ham. Ham, you know, turned black with shame. You know. So they use the scriptures. All right. We're in this nation, this strange place, this land. I can't separate America from black folks. Can you? My country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of, oh, only white men have liberty. But we serve disproportionately in every war you white men have created. In fact, I watch the news with my wife. They have a black woman that's a 2-star general. Black women serve in the military more than any other women. Whose nation? What nation? Can't be no nation without black people. Black people then, black people now. Now we're third in this equation of who's who in America. White folks in control. Latinos done passed black folks as the minority that needs to be paid attention to. Huh, this dialogue between black and white ain't over yet. This dialogue between black and white and Native American isn't over yet. This dialogue now has to include Latinos and Asians in a new understanding of what it is to be an American. But I stand before you today fully convinced, I'm convicted, there's no America without black people. The soul and the moral conviction of the nation comes out of a black context. You can't get to who we are as a nation without what we was as a colony and a people. The blood-stained hands, that's part of our story. The amazing mountains we have climbed, that's our story. The strive for justice and equality and liberty, that's our story, and it's forged and formed by a cauldron of human endeavors, black, white, and everything in between. There can't be no Mississippi Queen. There can't be no black face or white face. No minstrel show. No corn cakes, no gumbo, no peanut butter, no nothing. It's us together. We the people of America. I heard this morning that two people were killed in Newark, New Jersey, and I kind of was just like, oh man, why is this? Because if you live by the gun, you'll die by the gun. As mad as black folks want to be with white folks, nobody makes a brother pull a trigger on another brother. That's on you. Same thing can be said. Nothing makes a Latino, a black, or a white hate but what's inside of them. Your mama may have taught you to be prejudiced, but if you carry out that prejudice, that's on you. As God be my witness, I want to scream from the mountaintop. I have a dream, along with Dr. King's dream, of an America that's truthful. The lies my teacher told me should no longer be applicable to us. We've got to sing and proclaim from every pulpit and every mountaintop. This is a nation that was formed by all of us, for all of us. Citizens of the world gathered together. I think the OJs had a record. I can still see it. I think it was the OJs. It was the spinners of the OJs. And they were holding hands, and it was every racial type known, right? I think the Coca-Cola people took that and used that commercial. I'd like to teach the world to sing. Our perfect harmony, our musical tradition, our food, and our way of being uniquely American. I say white folks are African American too, because the human family comes out of Africa, and y'all been touched by things black your whole life, even if you didn't know it. It's inculcated in your persona. We're all part black. We're all part white. I don't know a black person born in this nation that doesn't know the chop down the cherry tree story. We're as white as white folks are. And you white folks, to a great extent, are black like me. See, it wasn't just a Pulitzer Prize winning author that let you experience what it is to be black. You know it when you've turned your head away from the shameful things you've seen other white folks do. You knew it when someone told that off-color joke and you felt ill, icky, that's nasty. Shame on them. But you made that half-hearted smile, right? Because that's what most of us do. We don't confront it. So I challenge you today, confront the ignorance everywhere you go. I challenge you today to take your blackness, yes, you white folks, take your blackness into your white enclaves and share with them the amazing things of blackness. Yeah, we got bad things too. We got cancer and HIV just like y'all do. And we got blood on our hands too, but add up the numbers you've killed. you'd see your blood-stained hands are a horrific thing, too, right? Take the story of Crispus Attucks and Frederick Douglass and Phyllis Wheatley and Sojourner Truth and Harriet Tubman and Martin King and Rosa Parks. Take it with you. Talk about people. Funny thing, my aunt was a housekeeper. You saw that show, The Maid, the movie The Maid? She said the white folks that she served, all they did was talk about black folks. She thought it was so ironic. She said, you'd have thought those white folks had something better to talk about. Baby, I don't understand. Something wrong with that folks. This is our land. There is no me without you. I hope you feel the same way too. Amen. Amen. Amen.